Perkei Avos, Perk Aleph, Mishneh Hay. We began Mishneh Hay last time. Yosi ben Yochni Shishlaim Omer, he beis chapasurcha revocha, yaniyim bnei beisecha, valtar v'sicha me'isha. Your house should be open for relief. Poor people should be comfortable in your house. And one should not talk too much, or altar v'sicha, don't have lengthy discussions im ha'isha. We translated last time idle chatter. The ishto amro, referring to a person's wife, kavacham ishto v'eschaver, how much more so with someone else's wife. Mikanu v'chacham v'chacham said, kalamar v'sicha im ha'isha gormor la'atzmo, one who talks too much with women will cause bad for himself, both with the v'teiris, but the Torah, v'sofu yorish gehenim, and ultimately will lead to gehenim. So Rabbeinu Yonah explains it very literally, that men should not be involved with other women, other married women. It only brings to bad things. But in the simple reading of it, it basically says one should limit his speech to women. And there's a well-known story in the Gemara where one of the Tanoim, Isaac Lili, went to a woman to ask directions, went to Bruya, and when he said, how do you tell me that I get the Lord? She was upset. So foolish. You know it says, Al Tara Sicha Ma'isha. All you should have said is, Ezel Lord, how to get to Lord, without any preamble, without any, just those the simple words, literally like counting the words you speak. You should have just said, how to get to Lord, how to Lord. And I would have told you had directions. So in the most simple reading of it, in the way the Gemara brings the story, a person would have to count his words. And we know that is not what happens today. People don't do that. And this is a question that I saw addressed in a sefer called Derech Pikudecha. The sefer Derech Pikudecha was written by the same author as the Bnei Sasser. And it's Sfiyali Melech Shapiro. It's a kind of Hasidic sefer, okay? From the Hasidic world. And with that preface, you understand he's coming from a very strict approach to these kind of things. And it's full of mitzvos, chassidus, and holiness, and things like that. And he happens to address that a person shouldn't talk with women, al tava sicha me'isha, b'ishta oma, kavachomer. He says, you know, it's impossible. Who's counting words when we talk with women? You shouldn't add a single extra word. We don't do that. And more than that, he says, people really don't worry about this. We don't see people are concerned about speaking with women and the like. Are we just blatantly violating the words of the Mishnah, of the Chazal, that said, Al-Tabba Sicha Me'isha? So how do you explain behavior in our time? And he wrote this over probably 150 years ago. Like, why is it that we don't find people are concerned with the Mishnah, Baba Tava Sicha Me'isha? So he says, I think the pshat's like this. There's a Sefer Hasidim that brings that at a Sheva Brachas or Chasana, if the men can see the women, if the men and women are in the same room and they can see each other, you can't say in the benching, the special benching for Sheva Brachas, you say Shasimcha Bima'ono, that there's Simcha in Hashem's dwelling place. Shasimcha Bima'ono. And there's no Simcha in Hashem's dwelling place when the Yetzer Hara is there. And therefore, you cannot say it when men and women together in the same room, when they can see each other. By Hasidim, very often, they're not in the same room at all. Sometimes they're totally different places. And they're very mocked about that. And the whole concept of Simcha B'Ma'onu itself is a beautiful concept. We say at Shavuot Brachos that this is a Simcha in Shemayim. I've said over at Shavuot Brachos, you know, the Chasen's great, the Kala's great, we love them all, but why on earth are we doing this? It's huge parties, elaborate, I mean, you know, they're nice and everything, we're happy for them, but why are we doing this? It doesn't make sense. 7 days of Shavuot Brachos to boot, you know, you make a Suda Simcha, you have a Suda Mitzvah, you have a Bris, you have a Bar Mitzvah, you have a Siyam Masechta, so you make a Suda. Okay, we'll make you a Suda, you have a Chasen, it's a nice Mitzvah. 7 days. So clearly, it's not because of them. It's not the Chasen, it's not the Kala. This is a Shemayim's simcha. This is simcha b'ma'ono. The Baruch Shem is b'simcha. When the Baruch Shem is b'simcha, we do 7 days. This is, it goes beyond the Chasan Kala. It transcends the Chasan Kala. So, the Sefer Chasidim says, you want to say the word simcha b'ma'ono, you can't have any men and women that they can see each other. And the Derech Kudecha says, we don't do that. We say simcha b'ma'ono.
He says we don't do that?
No, he says, you see the people, you'll see them in the same room, they'll do it. So he says that the Sefer Levush, which was written in the 1500s, writes that today we're not careful with this. Right in the 1500s. We don't worry about this. Why not? Because women are very common among us. We see them all the time. And therefore, it's not like it leads to any bad thoughts or any bad actions. It's we're so familiar with women that it's not relevant anymore, the requirement to keep them quarantined, so to speak. So he says, you know, there was a time when parnasa was available to men. You didn't see women outside. Women weren't at the workplace. They weren't in the shops. You didn't see women. And if a man came across a woman, it was a chiddush. It was something, never see that before. And the potential was there for bad thoughts and one thing to lead to the other. But today, because of Golos and parnasa's requirements, women are busy working and they're out in the stores and there's no chiddush. You see a lady, that's nothing unusual, something strange. And we're familiar with women. So therefore, there's no problem of simcha b'ma'ono. So says the Derech Pikudech, if that's the case, there's no problem of sicha with women either. The whole idea of Altar B'sicha Me'isha was when you never saw a woman. You weren't on the streets. You didn't see them in the stores. You didn't see them around. So if you came across a woman, it was strange. It was unusual. The Gemara says, better to walk behind a lion than to walk behind a woman. So Chavad Yosef says, in those days when women weren't around, it incited people to sin. But today, we see women every place we go, whatever we do. So it doesn't apply. So they want to say, Derech Pikudecha says it by Atar B'sicha Me'isha, the Levush says it by Simcha B'ma'ono. All these places where we find that women should be set aside for men to an extreme was at a time when life was conducted in such a way that men didn't come across women except their wives.
Why do some people like someone to drive?
Why women want to drive? Mm-hmm. You know, Satmarov is against everybody driving. He felt no one should drive. And mostly Hasidic places, women don't drive. What? Sneers. In other words, he felt that when you lived in the shtetl, you would not be exposed to the kind of pretzels you're exposed to one 15-minute ride in the car. And he was right. So you could spend a life in the shtetl and not see the things you're going to see 15 minutes driving in New York.
So
he just said, it's a problem. He felt, you know, if you could live in a quiet little enclave like Monroe and not have these issues, you're right. But others, he lived in Williamsburg. He lived in Williamsburg, and he felt that, there's more freedom. Go where you want. So he didn't like the whole thing. And there are place circles, mostly Hasidic, where they don't want women to drive. I don't know how prevalent it is in non-Hasidic circles. I think it's really the Hasidic circles that are always bad. But in the Yisod of the Mishnah, the Avtar B'sicha Isha, so there are those who explain it like this, like the Hizudecha, and therefore, it's not like it once was. There are still people who think there's no place for men teaching in a girls' school. I was talking to Yushalmiyid. And he said, if a man has to go to a girls' school, for sure there's a mechitza between him and the girls, and he'll give a talk behind the mechitza. Now, from his perspective, this doesn't exist, such a thing. But in our world, we don't think much of it. We are familiar with women, we deal with women, men deal with women. It's not what it was at one time. Having said that, I do think it's important to convey to you that there is a limit that, or a line, if you will, that one has to guard and respect. And that is, particularly in the workplace, and there's actually books that I've seen published about this, conduct between men and women in the workplace. There's no longer the world where you're just going to have men with men or women with women. And again, maybe some places, but typically it's not how it works. So these books tell us, and it makes a lot of sense, that anything that is business related can certainly be talked about. Anything on a professional level. On a professional level, there's nothing wrong. The line can't be crossed when you get personal. Now, what do I mean personal? Personal means a man asking a woman at work, and these are married people, let's say. You know, we have to get, forget about singles for a minute. It's married people. A man doesn't ask a woman, how is your vacation? How is your yontif? That's a personal question. That's nothing to do with work. There's nothing to do with the job at hand. That's more like the question a friend asks a friend. How's your vacation? Where are you going on vacation? These kind of questions. So you might talk to your friends about that, but you don't discuss it with other men. And then she'll discuss it with you. Because that's already not professional. Now again, some people don't think twice about it, but it's wrong. And the next level is, what? Sometimes it might be, good morning, how are you? Right. If I really don't want to know how your vacation was.
Good, right.
It's like, say, how are you? If I say, how are you, I really don't want to know. Exactly. So if that's what it is, then you're right. Say, oh, I hope you had a good vacation. You don't have to get into it.
Right.
Right? Or I hope you have a fine aunt, if I hope you enjoy your kids, whatever. So you could be polite.
Right.
But once you get into personal things like that, you're starting down a slippery slope. Yes.
So, say in the non-smoking environment, where do you draw the line between being friendly and not being rude?
You say you're
the same thing. They ask you, how was your vacation? You say, it was great. You don't get into it. You say as little as possible. You don't get into it. You have work to do. You try to stay as little as possible.
They're nosy.
The next step I want to point out is in the workplace that beyond this, which is like clearly you're getting yourself into trouble, is when you start confiding in your coworkers or employers and discussing problems you're having and how to deal with problems.
With accidental, you say?
Yes. Then you're really asking for trouble. And I've spoken to women who have found themselves in those situations, and it's a very big problem. You can't allow that to happen. You can't create an environment where that can happen. It's got to stay that your private life is private and not, and listen, you need to talk to someone, that's fine, but not the men at work or whatever. Now, clearly, in this one case that came to my attention, she had problems discussing with her husband, and that's why she's discussing with this other guy at work, but that's itself a problem that has to be addressed. In other words,
we just have a coworker.
But they were friendly. And then she was comfortable enough to discuss problems with him. And then compound with the fact that she was not comfortable discussing it with her husband. So they need marriage counseling to deal with her problems at home or her inability to communicate with her husband. But very often that's really what happens. Very often a chisaron, a lack in the relationship at home is what leads to these other relationships out of the home. So that's very often the root of the problem, and that's got to be addressed unless you want to ruin your life. You know, basically, that's what's happening here. So as long as it's on a professional level, it's not an issue. It's not an issue. It's when you get off that track, and I've seen some of these books, they're pretty strict, but I think they're right. A woman at work does a project. And the manager is a man, and she did a great job. So, how does he compliment her work?
Right.
He has to be very careful in what he says. He has to be very careful what he says. Yeah, giving a raise would help, but I'm just saying, as far as the words he uses, when a woman is complimented by a man, it's going to create a kesha. So he has to be very careful, especially if she doesn't get complimented at home. The same thing again. So he could say something. I think they say in the book says he could say you did a great job on that project, but you can't say that you're great. Like you are a great person for what you did. Exactly. You try to put the compliment on the project, not on the person. This project is amazing. Look at this. It's great. The project is great. They'll get pride in what they did because they know they did it and obviously it's directed to them. But instead of saying, you're amazing, I can't believe you did this, is that good, how'd you figure that out? You know, that kind of thing, that's not healthy. That's not going to be healthy in an environment from a Torah perspective.
What do you do if your employer is...
Does that.
An employee.
Right. So, again, if you have... if a woman has a good relationship with the people in her life, I think she could manage to get through it without bonding with her boss. But you have to be aware that's inappropriate. I don't know how much leeway you have to point out as inappropriate. Similarly, in a similar vein, I think I've mentioned to you that with coworkers, if you have to email men, you never put emoticons.
Never
put smiley faces. Never put smiley faces. And if you're texting, I don't know if you text at all with the other gender, but if for some reason your boss wants you to text, whatever it is, never conclude with any kind of emoticon. It has to be professional. And I've heard this from many people in the field, that it's the first step to a bad road. The simple, that texting can start the downfall of a marriage. So... the emoticons are out. You know, you can send an email if you have to, and again, you keep it professional, like any other communication. Any communication has to be professional. I think that's partially the problem with texting. Texting almost by definition is not professional.
Right.
It's like, came up by definition, not professional. But emoticons are out. So both on the sending end, you're a secretary and your boss is having a hard day, you don't send them a smiley face. It's not appropriate. And both ways, as you can only so much watch your own Dalai Lama. Sometimes just you can't control what's going on around you. But there's a fellow who received such a notice from an email from a secretary, and he went over to her and said, "Mrs. So and so, you don't realize this, or letting you know, it is inappropriate for you to send me an emoticon, a smiley face, with my emails. Please don't do it anymore."
So
he's the boss; he could do it. Anyway, and I told her, and she talked to him. She didn't realize what happened. So it is inappropriate. It is inappropriate, and again, that's beyond professional interaction. That's acceptable. That's, you know, in our day, that's the altar v'sicha me'isha. The altar v'sicha is going to be the non-professional interactions, the emoticons, anything like that. You have to be very careful. There was a girl who had a lot of hakaras atov to Rabbi Rothbard. I wanted to send them a gift. So she called me up and asked me, is it appropriate or inappropriate? Like, what should she do? I told her to send it to Mrs. Rothbard. Send it to Mrs. Rothbard. And it's to thank you for helping me out. And I go, whatever it is. There's nothing wrong with that. And I told Rabbi Rothbard that I told him. I mean, I let him know that this is my approach. I just felt it would be appropriate more that she sends it to the missus. I know there's a lady in my shul who would send my wife a gift before Yontif. And she'd put a note, because I always call your husband and take his time from you, so I'm sending a gift. So it's the same kind of idea. She's not going to send me a gift. She sends a gift to my wife.
What about thank you letters?
A thank you note, I think, is fine. Hakar Sato is fine. But it has to be, again, there's, I think, what's considered acceptable and then beyond. You have to be a certain degree of Yishuv Hadas. A thank you note, there's nothing wrong with a respectful, I think that's the right word, a respectful thank you note is fine. A friendly one is when you have to be careful. So maybe for your friends, you'll go to the card shop and buy something cute and funny. Not when you send it to a man. You know, a man will be a blank card and says thank you, and you write a note expressing your kavanas tov and thank you for you helped me, whatever it is. That's fine. Because that's like on a respectful level. On a friendly level, that's where you have to draw the line. And I think most people intuitively get that. But sometimes you find yourself in a position you don't realize it. I think that's really, in the case that have come to my attention, it was usually when women were not having the best relationships at home and they would gravitate towards men who appreciated them at work. And that was a problem. That's a big problem.
I'm assuming it's the same thing with singles, though.
Yeah, it could be true of singles, too. Even though with singles, it's a different dynamic. It's a little bit different dynamic. And but yes, it's absolutely true the same way that any interaction with men has to be professional. So then you have the shalas, so you, can the fellow take you to a business lunch? That's a fellow. There's a thing called a business lunch,
right,
where you go out with someone to lunch and you discuss business at lunch.
Right.
But by definition, there's a camaraderie in going to lunch with somebody. I'm not convinced it's proper for a man to go with a woman to lunch to discuss business things. We'll discuss business things in the office. She'll go to her lunch, you'll do his lunch. They're not going to go to lunch together. To go eat out with somebody?
On a date, yeah.
To eat out on a date?
Yeah.
Most people don't eat out on a date the first date. You usually don't eat out till you're later. Can you eat out on a date? Well, there are a few factors. There are a few factors that get into it. I think most people are uncomfortable eating out early on with just eating out with somebody else. But if a person has just flown in, or the timing is such that they're hungry, they didn't have supper, whatever it is, by definition, you may have to get something to eat. You know, we're going to shidduch that this boy is going to fly in and she'll be at work till 5 o'clock. She'll be ready at 6. She's not going to have time for supper. So they understood that you're going to get something to eat somewhere on the date. If you build it into the date, it's going to happen. Like, no one's saying that people have to starve. But typically, people don't eat out on early dates. I don't think that's so common.
Why shouldn't you lessen the camaraderie?
Trying
to lessen it? Is that...
When you go out, well, you don't know... You want to focus on the other person. Is this someone that I'm interested in pursuing for a shidduch, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's not a question of camaraderie or not. Do we try to minimize camaraderie on dates? To a certain degree. Because people can do affairs on dates, too. And especially once you're engaged, to be extra careful. So engaged couples have to be very vigilant in things they do together. But doesn't mean they can't eat out. I'm just saying you have to be able to gauge what is right. But in the whole concept of dating is so different than business anyway. You're trying to discern if this is a person that I'm going to spend my life with. So it's just a different dynamic. But I think partially you don't want too many distractions. See, they talk about going and then doing something. Well, if you're busy doing, do you have time talking? Then again, if you're talking, get bored. There has to be a balance. There has to be a balance. But ultimately, you want to be able to get to know the person. That's the whole purpose of it, to get to know the person. And then make a determination, do you keep going or not? For business, really you try to minimize as much as possible any extracurricular, like eating out, anything like that's not, it's beyond what is necessary for the actual business. Okay.
The other question is about the
by the Hasidim who do the mitzvotans, typically the kal doesn't come over till the mitzvotans. In other words, they're totally separate until the mitzvotans, and then by mitzvotans, the kal comes over with the chasn. And that's way into the night, and very often it's just family that's there at that time. That's one way. In the non-Hasidic circles, the question is, does the kal come to the chasn side or not? And essentially, when the kal does come across to the chasn, it is a mitzvotans. Even if they're not holding a gartel and any of that stuff, it really is essentially the concept of mitzvotans, yeah, when the kal is there. So some non-Hasidim are very against the kal coming over.
Because the kal comes, because the holy comes.
Probably that and that, and on top of it, all of the above.
Yeah.
It's a mitzvotans. All the ladies are there. They feel it's not. the whole mechitza comes down. You lost anything you try to accomplish. So some are against it. Some have a problem with it. And then I heard the newest pshara, that the kala can sit with the chas and buy the mechitza. As the kala doesn't come into the men's section, but the kala will go to the mechitza, and the chas will go to the mechitza, and they'll sit together at the mechitza.
And then
the ladies stay on the ladies' side, and the men stay on the men's side, and they'll dance for the kala with the chas next to her, but they're mamash by the mechitza. You've seen that. Sure you have.
Sitting at the mechitza?
Uh-huh.
Half and half?
You see that.
The kala on the lady side of the chas?
No, they're sitting next to each other. But they're sitting at the mechitza.
At the head of the mechitza?
At the mechitza. I think two of my daughters did it. That's what I heard about it. She couldn't come into the chasen side, but she sat by the mechitza with the chasen. I've seen it more than just by my daughters. I've seen other people do it like that.
See, really, what they're doing is
okay, the chasen is facing all the men, but the holding.
He is facing the men. They're all both facing the men.
Back.
Side by side.
Okay.
Side by side. No. Not back to back. Side by side, facing the men.
Oh, okay.
At the mechitza.
Okay.
Not in the middle of the floor. At the mechitza, right by mechitza.
Okay.
See,
right. Okay, good.
I'm saying even Kala dancing with their father right there.
I've seen that too. I thought that was strange, but I've seen that
too.
I saw that too, and I think that's really strange.
I thought it was very strange. I was at the chasna, and the Kala is at the mechitza.
Why is that so strange?
I thought it was very strange.
Why?
That's a mitzvah tans. It's a mitzvah tans.
So what? Whatever you want it.
Okay.
Is that a problem?
If you're not into mitzvah tans, it's a problem.
So what is the whole concept of the girl going to the chasen?
Ketzev marakta b'fnei hakala.
Okay, so.
So you have to dance and sing in front of the kala. If she's on the other side, how am I going to kind of that mitzvah?
With the kala going up and the chasen going up.
Of course, it's a mitzvah, same thing. Because what are they doing in between? He's in a chair and she's in a chair, and what's in between them?
People are trying to carry.
It used to be they were holding onto a napkin together. You ever see that?
They still do that. They throw balls, they throw napkins.
That's mitzvah. That is a mitzvah.
Okay, but
what you're watching is a mitzvah. That's the chasen dancing with the kala.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah.
That's people so against it?
That's it. Am I chasna? Someone wanted to pick me up and the rebbe stopped it. No. Can't be gone. And I asked them why. I said, it's a mitzvah tans. Okay.
It's what?
They told me it's a mitzvah tans. I said, fine.
But okay. Liquid is not
away. Someone had picked up my wife on the lady's side and someone said, pick me up. And the rebbe said, no. Put him down. Wouldn't let. So then I asked him afterwards, why didn't they? I said, because that's a mitzvah tans. I said, oh, okay.
And
I don't know.
Okay, and he was against that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Non-chassid were very against mitzvah tans. They hold the princess.
See, I just don't think it's appropriate. I mean,
I'll tell you the next level. You hear the next level? Be careful what I say. But I'll tell you the next level. The point is that a husband and wife cannot display any affection in public. There's such a concept.
In your living room. So saying, it's not in your living room, in your house.
So fine. That's the point. So you're agreeing?
Yeah.
That's the point. The problem with it is, what is the problem? The problem is you don't show affection in public.
Okay.
This is why you tell chasanim that when you get married, you don't walk in the streets holding your wife's hand. I stopped teaching chasanim when they didn't listen to me. You know, when I was in Baltimore, I taught many chasanim. I came here, I stopped. Because I realized, if they're not going to listen to me, I'm not going to bother teaching them. So that's showing affection in public. That's why we say not to do it. You can't show affection in public. The mitzvah tans is essentially showing affection in public. Even if they're holding a napkin between them or a garrote or whatever, that's showing affection in public. So then the question becomes...
Isn't a wedding different
though? No. Why should you show... So the question is, after the chuppah, by the chassidim,
they hold
hands.
So
not, they hold hands.
They didn't hold hands, but the kala held on to the chassidim's, I think...
That's very cool.
Like, they didn't hold... Yeah, because they're supposed to hold hands, but
that was the pshara. But most chassidim, they hold hands. But most chassidim, and so I've seen this, they hold hands. They walk from the chuba holding hands. Yeah. So I guess that's the most you'll ever see. In other words, it's lahavdil elef avdolos, the chassidish equivalent of you may now kiss the bride. So you show it's the maximum affection shown in public will be holding hands, walking from the chuppah to yichud. But after that, they don't come back from yichud holding hands.
But just
for the chuppah. Just for the chuppah yichud. That's it.
And the chassidim say that do that.
Yeah, sure. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. It's a big deal by them. And of course, by mitzvah tanz also. But from the non-chassidic perspective, it's showing affection in public. So the question that I have raised in the past is, sometimes you'll go to a wedding and you'll see, and I think it's not that I'm blaming anybody, I don't think they think about it. You'll see the chassan and kala sitting on their own table. I think that's wrong. I think it's showing affection in public.
Why do you to say big sitting there?
The chassan and kala having their own table. Well, I believe you have a head table, and the women and the men and the grandparents and the father.
Why is that any more affection sitting next to
you? Two of them sitting by themselves. And you know, by the way, the caterers call that table? They have a name for that table.
Sweetheart table.
It's called the sweetheart table. So I was validated. When I heard that, I said, I'm right. I'm right. It is. And I believe it is to a degree showing affection in public. So when I gave my drasha about Simcha b'ma'ono, this is not the chas and kala simcha, it's the b'ma'ono simcha. So I said, so obviously there's no place for this chas and kala sit by themselves. Obviously I was at the wedding, I knew I wasn't getting into problem when I said that. But in other words, it said, if you don't sit, the whole thing is you're sitting with the mishpacha. This is not your personal simcha. This is the family, the parents, the grandparents. They don't think about it. I think if they don't think about it, they don't realize. I really hold this wrong, personally.
So then does it become like the norm?
No, it does not become the norm. But over time, no, it's not.
Like,
I don't think
it's
so.
No longer, it's the same thing. Like the woman needs to not.
It's not no longer. What?
The chabad, what they do, what we do is like we have a. Two separate tables.
One for men, one for women.
Yeah,
they're not sitting together.
Yeah.
What?
Why are you so surprised? There's separate rooms. So at least it's not.
It was a kala and the mother, and the father.
And Eretz Yisrael is that way too. I've seen that in Eretz Yisrael also.
Who's that? At the head table, on the table.
I've seen this in Eretz Yisrael also. I've been to many in Eretz Yisrael. There were two head tables. They weren't next to each other. One head table was on the north, one head table was in the south, and one was just the men, one just the women, and that was it. She didn't come over. The Haitians had their own head table. That was it. Maybe for Benjamin she came over. That was it.
Okay.
That's not so unusual. We just don't see it that often.
Right.
We don't see it that often. But I don't think there's anything strange about that at all. They have a lifetime, 120 years together, Master Shem. But again, you have to know where you come from, where you grow up with what you see. If a girl, all her friends got married this way, no, you shouldn't tell her, no, you're not. I used to always tell my girls, no problem. You know, the men will be at Dov Ben Nachem, the girls will be at JCC, and we're fine, you know. The girls will be there, the boys will be there, we'll be fine. We don't have to go to some hand hotel. It's right here, you know, just divide them up. We'll do the chuppah somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, and we're not chas and kala. I don't get that. They just got like, it's their wedding.
They'll see each other by mitzvah tanz or by benching, whatever it is. You know, again, socially, if you grow up with this, it doesn't bother you. It's only because you grow up with the other way that it bothers you to imagine, you know, if you were in that position.
I just find it so interesting when you see, you know, like, not see them in the rabbah, it's like, you know, daughters get married, and you see, like, there's, like, on bleachers, and there is the rabbah, the chassan, and the kala with the garza, and it's like a sea of black, and you see, like, kala, white. Like,
right.
I find that so interesting.
You could say it's interesting. I think most women who see that feel very bad for the kala.
Yeah.
She would like to just dig a hole and climb in and not be in front of 20,000 men who are chanting and singing. I imagine it's uncomfortable for the kala.
A kala doesn't have the same. Why is the kala gown already so tight? Compared to a kula. Gowns are much tighter than kula. Is
this
something like
fancy,
not like a
shifukal? Sure, it's a
shifukal. So, what is it?
Kala's outfits are tight?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Tighter than I would wear one shirt?
I don't know. Tighter than Shabbos outfit?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Sometimes they're tight enough the kala can't even dance.
Of course.
Then it's too tight.
Tighter than
a shopping center? It's too tight. I know that there are. I believe there are gowns that are too tight. Why do I say that? Because I know with my wife and my kids, they would say, you can't wear that. Too tight. You could take it out.
Yeah, but there's still.
So other people wouldn't take it out. Okay, that's anything, you know. That's near Madrigas or anything. I'm sure there are collars whose collar gowns are not too tight.
It is.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Is this because the gowns, that's all the gowns are made?
I don't know. It's not my department. I don't get too much involved with collar gowns. But as far as things, my assumption going into collar gowns is there are sneas. There are some that aren't sneas. There's some that they make them sneas, and some that are, if it's too tight, it's not too tight. There's no mystery where too tight. You know, there's no such thing. There's no place that I've seen that sneas is abrogated for a collar. They talk about long skirts. The people who short long skirts don't have a problem with the collar gown.
What was it?
Gown.
Oh, no, not that.
I don't know. Certainly there is going to be an yonit sneas. There's even not the collar gowns. The mother gowns, the sister gowns, all of them. There are gowns that are that sneas gowns that there was a gown in a gamach, my wife said to me, she tried it on, and she didn't. I never saw the gown, but she tried it on, and the lady said to her, "Well, if you wear that gown, you're going to be making a statement." And obviously, she didn't wear that gown. So I don't know what these gowns are, but obviously, they're not all the same. There are some that are flashier, some that are less. There are some that designs are maybe inappropriate. Some that this is an all inyanit sneis. You have to be careful with your chasna clothes, just like you have to do with anything else. I know there are people who feel that the clothes in the local gemach do not fit their taste and style, and maybe call it slash sneas. They'll get from Lakewood, and it looks different. So that's
yeah, but not anymore.
It depends where you go. Everything's not necessary. That's true. Yes.
Just one last thing about Mr. Thomas. So if it's either way, it depends what you're comfortable with. If you're not comfortable doing anything, no. If you're comfortable, you could do it.
Mitzvotans?
Yeah.
Depends if you're feeling minig. So I'm not going to tell someone to do it if they don't have a minig to do it. Tell them not to do it.
Okay. So only if it's a minig. So
if you're family minig, it's a family minig.
So then you also tell them not to do lifting up?
Yeah, sure. If it's not your minig, you don't do it. The whole doing it is such a kasha. Why anyone does it? Listen, that's your minig. I'm not going to start fighting people's minhagim. I'm sure at one time my family was the family minig too, but eventually we went away from that. But the those who don't have a minig, there's more questions raised than answered with the mitzvotans, and that's why there's so many are against it. So many are anti it.
So what's the? I understand.
There's all kinds of holy. There's all kinds of holy things they associate with it. All kinds of Kabbalistic things involved. There's a yonim, but. It's like I said, in the nigla of it, there's big problems. Maybe in the nistra of it, there's explanations, but in the nigla, there's big problems.